I think we should get started on this panel. It's super exciting. We're glad you're all here. I just want to introduce this panel hosted by Lucas that is Breaking Tech Monopolies in Europe, a fireside chat with the European Commission. And I want to welcome Victor and Alexander from the European Commission. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'll leave it to you, Lucas. Oh, and here's a microphone for you to go back and forth.
OK.
And
okay.
Lucas, just mute when you're not talking.
All right.
OK.
OK. Everybody can hear me? It's okay. So I'm really, really glad and very happy to see everybody here. Look, the room is completely full. And it's signs of successful that people are interested in the Digital Markets Act. And it's interested in the work of the Commission. And that's, I think we will have a great time here discussing the future of the DMA. So my name is Lucas Lasota, and I work for the Free Software Foundation Europe. And we have been engaged since the beginning on the legislative process of the Digital Markets Act and now in its enforcement. And in this fire chat, I would like to bring the free software community closer to the work of the regulator, which the Commission is the enforcer of the Digital Markets Act. With that, I would like our guests, Alexander and Victor, first to present yourself and also to explain a little bit what is the DMA and why it's important for the free software community.
Thanks, Lucas, and thank you very much for having us today. We are very pleased. My name is Alexandre. I'm a case handler in the DMA team, working in DigiConnect, but it's the European Commission that is doing enforcement, as Lucas is saying. I was thinking that as a short introduction, because I assume that most of you are aware of the DMA and what we try to do with the DMA, but perhaps for those that are a little bit less familiar, maybe I can say a few words, so then in the discussion would be more meaningful for you. So essentially in the DMA, we are regulating what we call digital gatekeepers, that is to say those large companies that were designated formally as gatekeepers. They happen to be kind of the largest companies that provide the digital services. And we are regulating certain services that we consider that are gateways, that is to say services that sit between business users, that can be developers, and whoever is using this service in order to provide other services. And on the other side of the gateway, we have end users. We have in the DMA plenty of obligations because the idea is to actually open up that gateway. It's to lower the level of dependency that business users and end users have on those services. And these obligations range from data-related obligations, such as a ban on data combination between services of the gatekeeper. They also go into regulating more commercial relationships between the gatekeepers and business users, interoperability obligations that there was just talk right now. We have also transparency obligations. But as you said, we have a huge panoply of obligations that apply to gatekeepers and that the developers can benefit from.
Hi, I'm Victor. I'm a colleague of Alexandra, so also one of the case handlers. And I think one important thing to add is, of course, the Digital Markets Act is quite unique. There is a commission as a regulator. There is a law that, of course, needs to be enforced. But the topic is very technical, of course. We have to regulate these gatekeepers, how their hardware, software interacts with end users and business users. So we have a very multidisciplinary team. Alexander is one of the lawyers. We have a lot of economists as well to understand the business models that these gatekeepers have and the impact that has on the obligations. I'm one of the, we call ourselves a technologist, so a software engineer in training, which is of course very important to understand these obligations, to really go down into a very deep technical level into the impact that the DMA will have on how these gatekeepers proceed. So we really need these different people, these different backgrounds, to fully do our regulatory work.
Excellent. So as I correct and understood, the DMA is not about regulating competition between the large companies, but also to level the playing field, allowing access seekers to access the type of technology and infrastructure that is being created and kept by these companies, right? And in this sense, I would like to know if, especially from not only from the legal, but also from the technical perspective, has been the free software community useful for you to understand how, for an example, we just had the presentation from Mark from FFR, who break down these concepts and how this interconnect, interoperate, and did the free software community help you to understand better these concepts on the DMA?
Yeah, maybe I can tackle the first question because the second is technical, so I will leave that to Victor. But yeah, I mean, it's not about competition between, as you say, between big companies. I mean, ultimately, the main idea of the DMA is actually, as I was saying, is just to lower the degree of dependency that we have on these services. Of course, that means that everybody can benefit from them. That also implies big companies in the sense that they are business users as well, and sometimes they offer services to each other. So, and that means that initially they are not excluded from being beneficiaries. Now, that doesn't mean that it's to regulate their relationships.
Right.
It's about breaking up that dependency to lower the degree of, you know, that to is actually to make, to eliminate intermediaries, so to speak. And the degree of intermediation between these companies and the business users. And that, of course, implies more about, you know, it's the ultimate goal. Formally, we say that the DMA, and it's written in the DMA, and it's what we have in the law, that is to make digital markets more contestable and fairer. And ultimately, the goal is actually to kind of leave room for innovation. And, and it's actually where developers and the free software community actually can benefit from. It's just to have more space for them.
All right.
And indeed, as Alexander points out, the free software community is it has kind of a special position in this relation because, of course, if you have interactions between gatekeepers, those are both beholden to this law, but the free software community, of course, has its unique characteristics in terms of its abilities to benefit from the Digital Markets Act, and it also has a very unique position in terms of being helpful in a discussion. They not only have this very deep, again, technical knowledge of how access to gatekeepers, software and hardware, for example, could benefit them. They're also very principled. They really are focused on openness, on the freedom to do with your devices and so on what you want. They have also an emphasis on security and privacy. So they have this mission for openness. So this brings a very unique interaction and also a unique role in the interactions that they can have also with us as a regulator.
Yeah, that's excellent. Actually, I'm very happy that Boston last year we met and also we had this exchange. And during the whole year of 2024, we had a very deep dialogue with the Commission and the Free Software Foundation Europe, together with partners from Neftroid, Appfair, and GNU, Thaler. And we worked together. We submit positions. The Commission responded. I think it was a nice regulatory dialogue that we could establish in order to try to put the demands forward and in order to put the interests of the free software community for over there. And having what you both just said, I am a lawyer by training, and I am also a legal researcher. And one thing that I learned in the law school is that law always has some different interpretations, right? So it's not very possible to say that there's just one interpretation of the law, right? And here at the DMA, we are dwelling perhaps with a clash of cultures. We have the free software community, which takes usually reads the DMA more permissively, if you will, and looks in the letter of the law and says, we needed to interpret this broader, right? But then we have, on the other sides, we have Apple's and Microsoft of the life, when read the law said, no, this is not how you're thinking it should be reading, this should be closed, and the approach is much more restrictive. How the Commission deals with that?
That's a good question. But this is not unique to DMA. It's,
right.
It's actually about any regulation where you have, you have the text that you have, and you have to work with that. And as you say, it may be interpreted sometimes different ways, and the different actors, of course, they are going to actually interpret that from their perspective and to their benefit, and that's normal. I mean, maybe this is a very legal answer, but I mean, one of the things that when it comes to interpreting this type of text is that we have to look at the intent that is behind the legal text. And for that, for example, the court is going to see, okay, what's the intention of the legislators when they were actually preparing the regulation? What is the idea of this particular obligation, for example, of this article? And that's going to be, that's essentially what everybody has in mind when it comes to interpreting the DMA or, you know, whichever regulation. I mean, that doesn't mean that, you know, it can be that we can have different interpretations, and that doesn't mean that kind of if you feel, okay, my interpretation, I think it's a little bit of a stretch, so I'm just not going to raise the point or to kind of make the commission aware that this could be an interpretation. We always appreciate that type of input because, as you say, we can interpret kind of the legal concepts that we have from different perspectives, according a little bit with the intention of the co-legislators. Now, if that goes too far, we will tell you in the sense that we will say, well, that was not the intention behind the article. You know, these are the limits that we have, and of course, we have to work with the text that was approved. But you know, it's good actually to have that input because sometimes that discussion leads to discover other things and to realize. And at the end of the day, that's always very helpful. So it's not about saying, oh, please don't come. It's not that we are saying that if you feel that maybe too far. We're always very happy to listen to any type of argument and see, okay, let's see if this makes sense, legally speaking. Sometimes what we have is actually developers coming to us with a very technical argument, and then it's our job to, with the technicians that we had and the economists and the lawyers, to say, okay, this is the way that we can translate this argument into a kind of a legal argument, and this is the way that it could be interpreted in these obligations. So we always try to see how that fits. If it goes too far, we will tell you.
Okay. No, yeah, that's quite interesting, and because legally speaking, this is difficult, right? And as you said, we need to see if the arguments they are sound logically and in the sense of the spirit and the letter of the law. But now I would like to shift a little bit, also not from the difficulties in the legal world, but also in the technical world. And I do think that, and that's why the teams in the commission, they are multidisciplinary, right? We have lawyers, economists, we have other technical people. And what are the difficulties that when the commission is enforcing the DMA are facing in order to bring gatekeepers into compliance?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed, to be able to do our regulatory and enforcement work, we also need to have this very deep technical understanding of how these products work. What kind of data is available, what kind of interfaces are available, how do these hardware and software products interact, what are the challenges that the business users and the end users encounter, and we have to do this across all the obligations in the DMA as well, of course, and they touch upon really different aspects of the digital market, and we need to have this very broad coverage. We just saw this presentation on app stores, on sideloading, that has, again, it has its more contractual, commercial components, but it also has the technical components. We have to understand how are these solutions implemented, and what kind of are the intricacies, how does that can translate to compliance with the law. We also have provisions, let's say, on circumvention, mm-hmm. as they saw, on how these, what the user journey is, how is it actually usable towards end users. And the second thing is people might have seen that regarding interoperability, mm-hmm. We actually opened what we called specification proceedings, yeah. which is one other tool we have to basically, in interaction with the gatekeeper, kind of give guidance on how to comply with the law. And that goes to an extreme technical detail. We had it now with Apple. Part of it is already in the public. We cover everything from how a notification on an iPhone works all the way to how you have a peer-to-peer Wi-Fi interaction with other devices. So we need to, at all levels, at all stages, we have to get into the technical details. For this, we interact with the gatekeeper. We actually also have a sort of a regulatory right to request mm-hmm. that they explain to us how these things work, even internally. We have interactions with third parties, such as the free software community, to understand how actually day-to-day use by software developers, by software engineers, how that affects the obligations. We do, of course, also our own technical analysis, but we have to combine all of these things on the technical side with the legal side, with the economic side, to really to properly do the regulatory work and then assess indeed the compliance with the law.
Yeah, that's not simple at all. And right, since this session is about a fire chat, a chat not only between ourselves but also between the audience, I'd like to make the last question, so also to give floor to the audience. Looking ahead, which type of feedback do you would like to hear or to receive from the free software community in legal, in terms of legal, economy, and even technical aspects?
Well, the thing is, we need to understand two things. We need to understand well how the services work, kind of what Victor is saying. We need to understand kind of the very technical aspect of these services, and we also need to understand what are kind of the issues that the developers and other business users are actually facing. So what we need to know, and the type of input that we will need, not only legal, but it's also technical, and it's to say, well, you know, I'm trying to do this. I believe that the DMA is backing me up on this, but these are the problems that I'm facing. And that goes from, you know, when it comes to, for example, simply trying to get an app through notarization, for example, you can say, well, these are all the problems that I'm facing, and therefore I think that we have a problem here. And it's the type of input that we are looking for is actually kind of the, is the input that explains to us all those intricacies that we kind of cannot know because we are not using that service in that kind of in that manner. So anything like that would be very appreciated.
Yeah, great. And the technicals also is the same in your opinion?
Yeah, definitely. So indeed any like technical contributions are very welcome, again, to support the work that we do, to understand across all of these obligations, all the aspects. On the technical side, how these products work, how people are using them, and what problems they face, and how the DMA might contribute. And indeed, the free software community has this kind of like very technical, deep technical expertise, has its own special types of problems, let's say. So again, any contribution is very welcome.
Excellent. All right. Do we have some time for questions, Karen?
We have, yes, we have like 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay, excellent. All right, so, yeah, anyone has some questions? I see already some people. Okay, nice.
Okay. Hello, thank you for being here. So you mentioned that the objective of the DMA is to improve the fairness of the market, and that's pretty hard to measure. So what kind of evidence are you going to use to assess the behavior of the gatekeepers, the effectiveness of the remedies, and the impact of the DMA itself?
Do you want to take a few? Because we have five. Because maybe if there are similar questions, maybe you can take.
Yeah. Okay, so perhaps we can take other questions. So that one is about metrics, right, on fairness?
So related to the other one, how does the European Commission bring in how does the European Commission bring in the open source community when it's not naturally coming to the institution? So in topics that Microsoft or Apple may be pushing forward, how do you bring back the open source community?
Another one, or do you want to start?
Let's answer this too. And then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So your question, which is more about how to measure compliance, when it comes not only to fairness, but I suppose also that applies to market contestability, right, which is kind of the two goals. I mean, it's not that we have kind of a formula that we can apply and say, oh, okay, if I add 2 + 2, then, you know, this is the result that I have. It's more about sometimes it depends really on the obligation. So some obligations are really kind of obligations of result, and we need to see the results. If the results are not there, then that means that something is wrong. And then it's for us to analyze with the gatekeeper and say, okay, gatekeeper, you've been putting this compliance solution on the table, but we don't see the results. So where is the problem in all this process when you are implementing this compliance solution? There are other obligations that are less of a result. And then there we have to see ad hoc with the gatekeeper, what is it that they are putting in place? If we don't see, again, if we don't see that anything has changed, then, or if we, for example, some developers are very vocal and will come to us and will say, look, this is what the gatekeeper is putting on the table. We don't see any kind of a proper implementation, or maybe sometimes on, you know, on paper looks fine, but then the practical implementation of it doesn't work. So it really depends a little bit on the context and the type of service that we are regulating, the type of gatekeepers. Some gatekeepers have different service. I mean, they operate the same service, but in a different way. So it's not that we have a metric, so to speak, because it really, really depends on the actor, it really depends on the service, and it really depends also on what business users want to do with that service sometimes.
And in terms of the engagement with the community, it's definitely a valid concern. We, of course, if we are aware of a specific organization or something, or an advocacy group, that would be relevant to engagement for a certain obligation, we will try to seek out their contribution. But at the same time, what we really strongly encourage is that actually everyone has the right to reach out to us, and we have the, I think, obligation to actually process that and to engage further. So in that regard, if you would go to the website of the Commission of the Digital Markets Act, there's actually a way to reach out to us to file, let's say, a request or a concern, and that will be followed up by us. We actually have the kind of the necessity to be fair in the process and to listen to everybody who files a concern, and that I think would be the prime way to reach out to us. It's a bit more like you having to do the effort to get to us, but once we are aware of these concerns and we are aware of relevant parties, we will continue this engagement.
Excellent. Perhaps one more question.
Yes, thank you. I'm sitting here listening to a session about breaking big tech monopolies, while at the same time, one of the main sponsors of this event is one of those tech monopolies. To me, that really feels like I'm sitting in an environmental conference organized by Greenpeace, but sponsored by ExxonMobil. How do you feel that?
Well, I think I will take it because they are our guests. I think the diversity is the rule here in order for the success. What I mean is that, yeah, indeed, perhaps we have some sponsors that they are gatekeepers of the digital markets, but they are not the only ones. And I think we needed to be diversified in order to depend on them. And I think perhaps, I don't know about Fosun because I'm not involved in the administration, in the ORGA team, but I am involved with the Free Software Foundation Europe, and there we have a cap. No more than 20% of any donations for us should come from corporate donations. So although we received money from some gatekeepers, I think it's limited. So we are not dependent on them. So perhaps, I don't know how it works with Fosun, but if they have some kind of policy, I think then I would not see too much of a problem here. Karen? 2 minutes. Okay, so one more question then.
Yeah, so indeed, we're talking about breaking tech monopolies. If you would have to divide 100 energy points, how much energy points would go to looking at the internal workings of the companies that maybe we don't really want to spend our attention on because they're not really, let's say, the core focus of what we would want? And how many of those attention points would you want to actually creating an internal digital market in Europe for the open source initiatives that are already there?
This question is more for the Commission or for the... do you want to take this one?
We would like to, but could you perhaps rephrase? Because you're talking about attention points, but what do you mean by attention points?
So you mentioned you have to understand the inner workings of the platform.
Yeah.
Which means that we, as the European Commission, will spend a lot of time looking into the American big tech companies. So But we also want to create a European internal market, a single market. We want competition. So you have to talk with all the European companies and organizations that try to build up something. And how do you decide how to divide your focus?
Okay, so yeah, I'll rephrase the question. So the question is, because we've been focusing on how the services of the digital gatekeepers work, and we also have to kind of pay attention on kind of the European developers, how they work and what they need. Is that correct? Okay, so no, I mean, it's a bit of both, actually, because, for example, replying to coming back to the previous question about how we measure compliance, I mean, what I was saying is, well, it really depends on the case, and it really depends on the service and what kind of use of that service one business uses to do. And there we include actually European developers, which may have different business models, different intentions, and there is where we are actually paying attention to them. It's not about only understanding how the services of the gatekeepers work, which happen to be mostly non-European, but it's more also about understanding kind of what European developers need in terms of the use that they do of those services, their business models, and kind of all the technical capabilities that they need to benefit from.
All right, excellent. People, thank you very much for your undivided attention, and please give some applause to Victor and Alexandre.